Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Carmela Mbiso from Sandy.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Mandy Barnett, also from Sandy.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. Craig Allenby from Sandy.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Christian Olver. I'm standing in for Ms. Beryl Ferguson, who is the chairperson of the board. I'm the deputy chair, and I'm also the chair of the Research and Development Committee, which is covering a lot of the issues that are on the table today for discussion.
Good morning, Chair, committee members. I am Leslie Rutuli, board member, and also here with Dr. Over on the serving on two committees, the Audit and Risk and Research and Development Committee at Sunbeam.
The usual faces may need to introduce themselves. We can't stop halfway.
Good morning, members, and Sun CEO, acting DG and CEO, and my colleagues. My name is Sibongiseni Sanko. I'm the director in the office of the DG.
Good morning, members. My name is Buiswa. I am in the office of the Director General and the Parliamentary Officer.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Harry Masenya. I'm the PLO in the Deputy Minister's Office.
Morning, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Nelisiwe Msibi. I'm the head of the Office of the Deputy Minister. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members, colleagues. I'm Paul Daphne, Chief of Staff in the Ministry.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. I'm Errol Makoba, Parliamentary Officer in the Minister's Office.
I think all being said, Chief, I'm heading back to you, and I also forgot to say I also sit in the Audit Committee of
Perhaps it's usually the case. I hope you will not hijacking you, Citizen of the Board. We may allow you to have some remarks before we hand over to the CEO. So if you have got something to say, just share with us broadly whatever you think may be necessary for the honorable members to know. Thanks, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and once again, very good morning to everyone. The substantive presentations are going to be made by our CEO, who's going to take us through the second and third quarter report. So we're very happy to be able to present to you the progress that we've made in the second and third quarters. As you will hear, there are one or two areas in which we are falling behind in terms of the targets. And the board has been particularly concerned about those areas. And I can assure you that we've been applying our mind to them. And in the discussion, we'll talk about most of the areas we think we're going to be able to make up by the end of the financial year. There are two areas where we don't think we will reach the target completely. But I'd rather let the CEO make the presentation and then we can discuss whether the corrective measures are adequate or not. But just to give you the assurance that the board has spent, I mean, this has gone through the Audit and Risk Committee and the RDI Committee and the board. And we are as concerned, I think, as you are regarding any failure to progress according to the targets that have been set. So I'll come back once the presentation has been made and I think we can talk a little bit further about that. And then just to say that on the adaptation projects and the Green Climate Fund, and in particular the project in KZN, the two projects in KZN that the committee asked for information on, we've got the head of our GCF and the Green Climate Fund program, Mandy Barnett, who's here with us, and she will take us through a full briefing on those projects. I know
hope that the committee expressed some concern regarding those projects. Again, the RDI committee that I chair has interrogated the project in some detail. And we had in the back of our mind the issues that the committee itself had raised about those projects. So we've, as a committee, looked at them extremely closely. And we are satisfied that there's nothing untoward about it. But I think let's hear the presentation and then we can have further discussion about that. And see whether you yourself are satisfied with the replies. The one issue that does concern us is the underspending on the project. And we have had some real challenges in getting procurement by the district municipality to move forward at the pace that we need to be moving at. But I think Mandy will take us through that in a little bit more detail. And then if there are further questions, Dr. Latuli and I will be able to answer those.
Thanks for all that. I think it does give some context around which the presentations will be made, but as you say, the detail in the presentation will help us understand exactly whether our concerns are being addressed or not. We'll take it from there. But let me indicate to the meeting that the chairperson, unfortunately, has now joined us even before we get far with the program of the day. So I wouldn't want to allow him not to earn a single cent of his salary. I would want him to earn his money. So he would have to proceed to this chair and take... okay. Chair, we're not far yet. It was still introductions and the contextualization of how the presentation will be made and the issues that we raised with Zambia in particular. So the deputy chairperson of the board was just taking us through those presentations as you joined the meeting. So we haven't gone that far. So let me allow the CEO to immediately take us through the presentation. And then later, when we get to the other bullet point on the funding of the KZN project, we'll also understand in greater detail what the deputy chairperson was talking about. All right, over to you, Ms. Dr. Lambert.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Member. I wish to start on slide number 3 of the presentation, which presents the outline. The presentation that I will be making will cover the progress made on the predetermined targets. I will then hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to present to the committee all matters that are related to our financial statements, as well as address the concerns that were raised by the AG. Then I will invite the Acting Managing Director of the National Zoological Gardens to share with the committee on the achievements of the National Zoological Gardens since the transfer on the 1st of April 2018. Honourable Members, the presentation outline indicates that the slides number 4, 5, 6 and 8 cover the vision, the mission of the South African National Biodiversity Institute, our legislative policy mandate, as well as our contribution to national and international priorities. I would therefore, Chairperson, request that we move on to slide number 9, which indicates the programs of the Institute. The Institute has got 7 programs that are listed. that include starting with corporate services or administration. Program number two related to the National Botanical Garden. Program number three on foundational biodiversity science. Program four and five cover biodiversity knowledge and policy making. Program number six cover the human capital development, education and awareness in response to the mandate of the Institute. The last program is on the National Zoological Gardens, and it was added once the NZG was transferred to the Institute. The honorable members can take note that for the programs that we are managing, for program one, three, and five, we were able to achieve all targets as at the end of quarter three of the financial year. For program two, four, six, and seven, there are areas where there is still work in progress. We have not fully achieved the targets. On slide number 10, I will then start with the details of program number one to render effective and efficient corporate services. The first target is related to the performance indicator on the percentage payroll that is allocated and spent on staff development. The committee can take note that for at the end of quarter three, we had exceeded the set target of 1%, and the amount of money that is on the payroll that was spent is indicated that the actual amount spent is 1.4 million rand. And the committee can take note that there are no challenges with regard to this target because it was fully met, if not exceeded. The second performance indicator related to this particular program is transformation, a transformed institute that reflects the demography of the South African population. Once again, the committee can take note that the targets that were set related to female staff on permanent and contract employment, as well as female staff in top and senior management, both targets were exceeded. I must just apologize that the percentage that is reflected there for female...
CEO, sorry for interjection. Honorable members, if you don't mind, because we started at 10, I was going to advise that the presentation focuses on the partially achieved and those targets that seem to be difficult to achieve, which the Deputy Chair even indicated some of them may not be achieved, other than dwelling more on those that were exceeded, achieved, and some where there may not be issues. Yes, perhaps you may want to go through some of them just to let us know if they are so important, but not go into details, greater details. Otherwise, we are going to lose some valuable time that we are going to allow members to interact with you in questioning time and so on and so on. If you don't mind, let's focus on those areas that seems to be a challenge. Honorable members, does that satisfy your... Okay, thanks. Let's proceed that way.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. In that case, then, Chair, I would invite the committee to look at slide number 17 under program 2. Program 2 is for the management and unlocking the benefits that are offered by the network of National Botanical Gardens. On slide 17, there is a performance indicator related to the number of new National Botanical Gardens established and operational. The committee can take note that we are working on the completion of the establishment of Toyando Botanical Garden, and at the end of quarter three, the targets that were set, one being the implementation of prioritized building upgrades and improvements, the second one, the development of the site plan, the third one, the implementation of the cultural heritage assessment. We had challenges, but Chair, I can now report that we have completed the site development plan. We have completed the cultural heritage assessment. The only other matter that is still outstanding is the completion of the building upgrades, the implementation thereof. So the target would remain partially completed by the end of the year. The two other targets would be fully met, except for the one related to the implementation of prioritized building upgrades and implementation. Chair, then on slide number 19, still on the network of National Botanical Gardens, I wish to bring to the attention of the committee that for the year we had planned to complete project related to 45 maintenance, development and infrastructure projects. As we were reporting at the end of the quarter, we had not completed two capital infrastructure projects. So the target for the quarter three was 25. We had completed 23, but today I can give the committee the assurance that by the end of the financial year, 31st of March, we would have met the target of 25 projects, capital infrastructure projects as planned. Then, Chair, I would invite the committee to look at slide number 24 related to Program 4, the assessment, monitoring and reporting on the state of biodiversity and the increase in knowledge for decision making, including adaptation and climate change. We have challenges with two performance indicators, the first one being the number of research papers published in journals that are accredited by the Department of Higher Education. The third target for the year was 85 publications, and as indicated by Dr. Oliver, we are behind schedule and it may not be possible for us to fully achieve the target as set for the year. The committee can take note that on our, as an institution, we try to adhere to controlling issues that are within our sphere of control, but because these are publications that require input by external editors and other related measures to publication, we're not fully in control of the entire process. So, Chair, I wish to present that we cannot give the committee the assurance that we will have reached the target of 85 publications by the end of the financial year. Still on slide number 24, the expectation for the year is that we would have had 35 plans done for invasive species projects, and to date we have not fully met that target. The committee can take note that at the end of quarter four, we may have been behind, but we will meet the annual target. One of the factors that influences this particular target is the seasons of the year, because the flowering season is between November and February, so we've managed to catch up and we have addressed issues related to internal capacity to meet the target as set. Then, Chair, on slide number 25, still on the same program for the assessment, monitoring and reporting on the state of biodiversity. We are behind on the performance indicator related to the number of risk analysis that ought to be conducted for invasive species. The target was 20 and we were able to complete 5 of the 20. Some of the corrective measures that we've put in place is to work better with our partner, which is the University of Stellenbosch, and to ensure that more work is done in a better way when it comes to collaboration with the University of Stellenbosch. Then still on program 4, Chair and Honorable Members, on slide number 26, we are behind schedule on the annual update of species assessment. related to supporting the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act regulations. And here, the reason why we were not able to meet the target at the end of the quarter is because of the involvement of external participants, but we can assure the committee that by the end of the year, the outstanding workshops would have been held. Then on slide number 27 under program 5, related to the responsibility to provide biodiversity policy advice and access to biodiversity information in support, as well as supporting climate change, we were behind schedule related to the target on knowledge resources developed. The honorable members can take note that we have indicated that there that we had only completed one instead of two knowledge resources, and by now we were able to utilize the critical biodiversity areas map to complete the development of the land use planning related activities and decision making. And I can assure the committee that by the end of the year, we will have met that particular target. Chairperson, then on slide number 33 related to program 6 under human capital development, we did not meet the target on the number of universities that should participate in the PAREAS program. For the year, we have set a target of 15. At the end of quarter 3, we have only managed to do 13, but I can assure the committee that the remaining 2 will be addressed by the end of March. So from the list that is provided there on that slide on the 15 universities that were selected for the financial year, the committee can take note that the only university that we haven't visited would be the University of South Africa, and once we visit the 2 campuses, we would have met the target. On the next slide, still on human capital development, we are behind on the number of beneficiaries that should be participating in the Kids in the Garden program, and we are working on the target. On this one, I cannot give the assurance whether we will fully meet the target. Then I would invite the committee to look at slide number 37 on visitor numbers to the National Zoological Gardens. We had set a target of 320,000 visitors for the third quarter. The committee can take note that we are behind schedule. There is a number that is reflected there that may not be the correct figure. The correct figure that was reached by the end of quarter 3 should be 272,584,000. The committee can take note that we have put in place corrective measures to address the visitor numbers to the zoo and some of the activities that we plan to do for the rest of the remaining part of this financial year are listed in there as several promotions related to whatever would be socially attractive, including interest of people who visit with their families. Having said that, Chairperson, I would then invite the committee to look at slide number 39, which gives a summary of what we have achieved for the quarter. The committee can take note that for quarter 2 and quarter 3, the targets that were planned are reflected there collectively as 42. For quarter 2, we did achieve 34 targets. 8 were partially achieved. For quarter 3, we did achieve 32 of the targets. 10 were partially achieved. Chair, we have also provided additional information on the next 2 slides just to share with the committee on the kind of work that we do related to research. And the rest of the slides give an indication of the demographics for the staff, those that are permanent or on contract for the Institute as well as the National Zoological Gardens. Chair, with your permission, I will now invite the CFO to take the committee through the financials at the end of the process. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. I'm first going to deal with the SANB financial performance. At the end of quarter three, we had collected revenue of 413 million against the budget of 432, giving us a variance of 5%. Year on year, we were on par with how we had performed in the previous year. The main cause of the variance is resulting from projects and donations income, where there is a timing issue with the income coming through. The projects which are behind with their revenue, it's mainly on the Global Environmental Facility 5, the Adaptation Fund, the Custodian of Rare and Endangered Wildlife, Wildflowers Project, Action for People and Environment Project, Wetland Mapping, Carbon Capture and Storage Technology, and a few projects that are funded by the Botanical Society. The funding will still come to SANB. It may be possible that it will be received. Some will be received in this financial year and some may come through in April, meaning in 1920. On spending overall, we spent 397 million against a budget of 448, giving us an 11% variance, 50 million. Year on year, we are below what we spent in the previous year by 17%. On personnel, there's a slight over expenditure of 1.6 million, which is mainly as a result of accrual of annual leave. It is expected that by the end of the financial year, it would have normalized with people having taken their annual leave in December and January. Then on operating expenses, it's below budget with 23 million, mainly as a result of the projects which I have just mentioned. They are underspending as a result of revenue not yet flowing through. Then on capital expenditure, we have underspent by 29 million, but it's expected that the full budget on capital spending is fully committed for the financial year, so we are still expecting for spending to come through. Overall, we are reporting a net surplus of 15.4 million against a deficit of 15.9, which was budgeted for. Moving on to the financial performance, financial position, my apologies. We are still stable compared to the end of the financial year. There's just a 1% movement from the previous financial year. Our overall balance sheet has grown by 4.5 million. Our total assets exceed total liabilities with 557 million, giving us a status of insolvent. And when we look at current assets against current liabilities, it exceeds it by 248 million, giving us comfort of being able to pay all the liabilities in the organization. On the financial indicators, compared to end of the financial year, it would appear that we have improved on the creditor payment period from 43.1 days to 30.1 days. And on the revenue management, we have slightly worsened from 21.9 to 41.9 days. However, our collection period within that period was still 75 days, hence it is green. We have addressed the contract issues with the various tenants, and going forward we are expecting it to be within 30 days. On the next slide, we are addressing the irregular expenditure where we are as at end of December. We had on the first item the issue around the construction of a building at Harold Potter National Botanical Garden, where board approval was not provided, was obtained for 17.5 million. It has been condoned after disciplinary action was taken, and additional review processes have been included, and a checklist developed and implemented to strengthen processes. Then there was a 10.8 million irregular expenditure resulting from the gate ticketing services at the Kirsten Bosch National Botanical Garden. It's also condoned by the board after a process of disciplinary was initiated. However, the incumbent passed away whilst in service, and there was no other employee that could be held accountable. We also have a new service provider after an open bidding process was followed from 1 September 2018. It is now in place and offering the services. And overall, we've also reviewed all the service provider contracts that are being used in the organization. Then we also had an issue around where three quotations were not obtained for medical screening exercise at Pretoria National Botanical Garden for 7,000 rand. It's also condoned, and disciplinary action was also taken. We have remaining an issue around 1.2 million relating to the procurement of goods and services being split due to insufficient planning. For the financial, for the remainder of the financial year, we have put a demand management plan in place, and it's being monitored for adherence, and disciplinary processes are still in progress. Moving on to other issues emanating from the external audit, progress on how we are resolving the qualification findings. The first one is around the issue of operating expenditure, where we were found wanting was classification of operating expenditure between fixed assets and expenses. Corrections were made to the financials. However, we're still qualified based on the extrapolated figure. What we have done is we have reviewed the previous financial year's general ledger and made corrections to all the classification issues. We've also reviewed the current financial year as well. And going forward from October, we are ensuring that all allocations are done properly to the correct GL accounts before they are being processed. Then there was an issue on the emphasis of matter, where there was a change in how the infrastructure and other funders funding agreements were viewed. And we had made an adjustment on the financial, and we are implementing that new standard, the interpretation that was concluded during the audit. On the next one, supply chain management on local content. We are making sure that there is the minimum percentages, there is adherence at RFQ stage and also before we conclude any procurement. Then the performance information, there was an issue on program 2 and program 6 on the nature of the evidence that was provided during the edit, the audit. Then on program 2, we are now using the system-generated evidence to ensure that our visitor numbers are well supported. And for program 6, we are maintaining class lists for each and every visitation. Then we have issues on internal controls. The first one was around proper record keeping on financial and performance management. We are maintaining all the records and we are making sure that there is ease of access during audits. Then processing and reconciling controls. All our financial reports are being reconciled monthly and we are keeping evidence to that effect. And performance reports are being reconciled on a quarterly basis. Then regular reporting, and quarterly we are ensuring that the performance reports are reviewed before being finalized, and also the financial reports are being reviewed on a monthly basis. Compliance monitoring, compliance on, this was particularly on local content and around compliance with GRAP. So we have made arrangements for financials to be adequately reviewed before submission to the AG, but also on the SCM local content is being also monitored. Then IT systems controls. We have put in place a review process for twice during the financial year where the user's accesses and privileges are reviewed and records are maintained to that effect. Moving on to NZG, the preliminary financial performance report, it is still ring-fenced, that's been presented separately. So for at the end of the quarter 3, NZG had generated revenue of 101 million against a budget of 115 million with a 12% shortfall, and it's mainly resulting from revenue from operating expenditure, from operating activities, which is admissions, fees and other income. There were interventions that were put in place during the festive period to ensure that there's more feet to the garden. However, it's still struggling with reaching the budgeted revenue figures. On spending, we have spent 97 million against a budget of 115, which is 16% below the overall spending, and it's purely because spending in NZG is being closely monitored. When you look at operating expenditure, essentially from the government grant, it's not covered, and all operating expenditure is being funded out of operating activities that generate revenue. So it's been closely guarded, ensuring that there isn't overcommitment. Also on the personnel, it was closely monitored to make sure that we don't overcommit and there is a proper review of where vacancies are. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, with your permission, I wish to invite Mr. Allenby to present the achievements from the National Zoological Gardens. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO. Chair, honourable members, I'd like to just focus on the areas that have changed since your oversight visit in September, so that we don't cover the same area. Thus, I'd like to just go to slide 69 with your indulgence. Just to give you an update, we were able to secure 18 million rand from the National Department of Tourism for upgrades at the NZG. We have now been able to develop site development plans for Mokopane as well as the Pretoria site, and we're also in the process of dealing with the specifications around the items that need to be procured for the funding that we've secured. We've gone a substantial way in spending the 2 million rand that we were allocated from the National Research Foundation for upgrading our animal collection. As mentioned in the performance indicator, one of the key species that we'll be bringing in still within this financial year is some sharks, just to drive visitor numbers at the NZG. We've been engaging with the Department of Environmental Affairs around the need to upgrade the infrastructure at the NZG. A number of projects have been identified that are currently under consideration for implementation. We've also engaged with the National Department of Tourism for the development and funding of a master plan for the NZG, which they have committed themselves to. This is then a long-term plan for the redevelopment of the NZG, taking into consideration the location of the zoo and the future expansion needs of the organization and how it responds to the changing environment. We've also been actively contributing to the development of SANBI's overall research strategy, ensuring that the NZG is part of it and meeting the mandate of SANBI. Phase one of the SANBI branding has been completed at the NZG, so when you drive past, you'll see the branding of both SANBI and DM. And we're also forming part of the marketing strategy of SANBI, so you'll see us in all their marketing collateral as well. Moving on to the next slide. Just some of the key activities that still need to happen in terms of the integration. It's more related to the human capacity or the human resources of the NZG. Some of the key areas that need to be achieved before the end of the next financial year when the ring fencing period ends relates to job evaluation and job grading to ensure that there is an ability to judge the positions of the NZG against those of SANBI to ensure that there is harmonization between the two. Once we've done the job grading and the evaluation, then it's the negotiations around the alignment with the pay scales. And that will then include also the various reporting lines and how the NZG finally incorporates into the rest of SANBI and dealing then with the NZG no longer as Program 7, but as part of one of the other programs. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson, are we allowed to proceed with the briefing on the funding of a project in KwaZulu-Natal Municipality?
Yes, we can do that, and we'll have discussions according to the program on the tool immediately hereafter.
Thank you very much. Mandy will do the presentation.
Thank you and good morning, chairs and honourable members. It's a great privilege actually to be able to be here with you today to present on some of our work in the Umgungu Global District Municipality and also with the Adaptation Fund and Green Climate Fund. You'll hear in the presentation that the one project which is called the Umgeni Resilience Project, which is funded through the Adaptation Fund, is the subject of both of the questions. So I'm going to cover the detail of the project in the first question and then provide the context to it in the second question. So the first question was about funding to a municipality in KZN, and the second question was around Sandy's work with the Green Climate Fund and the Adaptation Fund. Okay, so first of all, in response to the first question, which is about what investment SANBI is supporting in the KZN municipality, there are two initiatives that are underway with SANBI support. The first is the Umgeni Resilience Project, which is funded by the Adaptation Fund through SANBI, with the Umgungu Global District Municipality as the project's executing entity or the project lead. And the second project, which is receiving a much, much smaller amount in direct funding from SANBI, is a project through the Global Environment Facility supported by the United Nations Development Programme, with SANBI as the executing entity or project lead. The Umgeni Resilience Project, very exciting project that's taking place in the district municipality. It's focusing on three areas in Nkazuka, Swayamani, and Bulilela. It's a project that has a value of $7.5 million, of which $5.5 million is for direct funding to the district municipality. And you can see that to date there's only been $0.9 million spent. So that echoes what the Deputy Chair was saying at the beginning of the presentation, that we have a concern about the speed of spend in this project and are giving it close attention. An audit was undertaken for the second year of this project and it was unqualified. So we're happy to say that there are no untoward issues that are taking place in terms of the implementation of this project. I should let the honourable members know that this project was selected through a competitive process. SANBI issued a call for proposals all the way back in 2013, and the municipality was one of the applicants. At the time, we had a national implementing entity steering committee that comprised of Treasury, SANBI, DPME, and DIA, and that committee oversaw the selection of this project, and that's how it comes to be one of SANBI's adaptation fund projects. The project itself is focusing on reducing the vulnerability of communities and small-scale farmers in the district, and it does this through three main sets of activities. The first is the creation of early warning systems and the development and implementation of them. The second one is investments in ecological and built infrastructure. The third is a big focus on small-scale growers and agriculture. And then the final program of work is about capturing lessons and developing some informants for policy. So far, the project has done quite well, notwithstanding the low spend, in moving forward with early warning system or aspects of the early warning system development, the identification of built infrastructure focal points. And what I would like to just mention is the most significant impact of this project so far has happened in the agricultural space, where there are already almost 400 farmers, 438 of whom are women, who have got double growing seasons as a result of this project. And double growing seasons means that people are growing surplus, it means they can sell it, it means that they're building some economic resilience to the impacts of climate change when they're hit by things like floods and droughts and so on. There's also really interesting work on site in Swayamani with the installation of local weather stations and the creation of mechanisms to send seasonal forecasting via cell phone applications to farmers and the children interpret the information and advise their parents when is a better time to plant given the variability in the climate. The impact of this project once it's completed will be 25,000 people who will be benefiting from better downscaled early warning systems. It gives people information at the right time to move their assets and get themselves out of the way of storms and floods. You can appreciate that if you are a disaster management official and you don't have firm protocols, you're in quite an awkward situation when bad weather is coming. Because if you tell people to move out of the way and the bad weather doesn't come as intensely as it was supposed to, that's viewed as bad performance, and the other way around is also true. At the end of the project as well, you can see that we'll have 200 hectares of grasslands restored, 100 hectares of invasive alien vegetation removed, and we will have invested in 300 houses and 10 kilometres of stormwater drainage. Importantly about this component of work is that it's informing municipal bylaws and building regulations with a view to making sure that all of that is more climate resilient going forward. Okay, so the future plans for this project really are to start delivering on some of the activities that haven't been developed or managed to be implemented so far, and mostly, as I mentioned, the focus on accelerating spend. The second project that is investing in the Umgubu Global District Municipality is a project called the Biodiversity Land Use Project. It's a project that's funded through the Global Environment Facility and is led by a number of partners in several district municipalities across the country. The municipalities were chosen because they are biodiversity hotspot areas and because they're areas where the Global Environment Facility had not invested previously. The overall value of the project is 8.2 million, but as you can see from the slide, there's only a relatively small amount of money that is to be directly invested in the municipality, $23,000 for direct investment in the municipality, of which $15,000 has been spent to date. If we look at the full investment into that municipality, it's a slightly higher number, with $1.1 million having been invested to date. The objectives of this project are to minimize the threat to biodiversity by working with municipalities and areas of land use management and biodiversity conservation. And the project is focusing on mainstreaming biodiversity into municipal planning processes, creating mechanisms and strengthening things like biodiversity stewardship agreements, and working with production sectors. The achievements in the Umkhuvu Global District Municipality to date have been interventions in strengthening spatial development frameworks and land use schemes, and the identification of two projects in the Umgeni local municipality to be the subject of small grants from the Ecological Infrastructure Challenge Fund, which passes small amounts of money onto biodiversity restoration and rehabilitation projects. And you can see from the slide that the Umsambuzi Bainspread River and the Umgeni and Mtsinzima wetlands have been identified as focal areas for these projects. The funding for both of these projects will not go to these local municipalities, it will go through dear NRM partners to support the rehabilitation and restoration work. And the impact in the Umgeni, in the Umgungu Global District Municipality will be that 5 land use schemes will be improved through and better strengthened to consider biodiversity and a range of ecosystem rehabilitation outcomes and some job creation. So future plans for this project are once again to accelerate spend towards the completion of the project deliverables. The project has about 1 year left to go before it concludes. Then, honourable members, I'd like to turn your attention to Sandy's work in the Adaptation Fund and the Green Climate Fund. We've provided you with a little set of flyers, and these provide some high-level information about climate change adaptation. Why is it important? What's the Adaptation Fund and Green Climate Fund doing in South Africa? And what is SAMI doing on the ground in the projects in which it's already investing? It's a hugely interesting program of work for SAMI, and I think, as you can all appreciate, climate change will undermine our efforts in social and economic development across the country if we don't fully mainstream it into our social and economic development programs. So SAMI's work is a contribution to understanding how to do that in the adaptation space. And maybe just for honourable members who are not so familiar with this, adaptation is the program of work that responds to the fact that a certain amount of climate change is going to happen and is already happening, even if we move ahead with our mitigation plans or our plans to stop emitting carbon. So first of all, on the Adaptation Fund, the Adaptation Fund was established under the Kyoto Protocol, and it is set up to fund adaptation projects in developing countries. It has a cap of $10 million per country, and it innovates something quite special, which is a mechanism called direct access. And what that means is that instead of the funds coming into developing countries through multilateral agencies, like the United Nations Development Programme, it accredits national entities to do this work. Now that's important because it increases national agency in terms of the identification of projects and also in terms of making sure that those projects are fully embedded in the policy and other implementation environments of the countries in which these agencies work. In 2011, SAMB was accredited as the national implementing entity of the Adaptation Fund following a nomination by DEAR. And since then, we have been developing and eventually implementing two projects that are funded through the fund. So you can see what they are. It's the Umgeni Resilience Project, and that's the project I just spoke about. It has a value of $7.5 million. And then the second project is called the Community Adaptation Small Grant Facility Project. And this is a project that has a value of $2.5 million. In the next slide, you can just see some photographs from the project areas, giving you a sense of who the local partners are and what the receiving environments look like in these projects. The project on the left is the Small Grant Facility Project, and this one came about because when we started our project development processes for the Adaptation Fund, we held some stakeholder meetings, and at some of the meetings, some of the local stakeholders said to us, what do you mean direct access if it's millions of dollars to government? Direct access is when you give us resources to respond to the things that are important to us. And out of that came the idea that we should put forward a small grant facility, and we weren't sure at the time if the Adaptation Fund would even consider such a mechanism. And they did support it and created a whole new modality in the fund called Enhanced Direct Access, which I'm pleased to say is now a modality of the Green Climate Fund as well. So what you're seeing now across many developing countries are the creation of these projects, which have small grant facility mechanisms in them, whereby instead of national actors deciding what should happen in support of adaptation responses, the voices of local people are given a chance to come through. In Sandy's small grant facility project, we are working in the Mopani District Municipality in Limpopo and the Namakwa District Municipality in the Northern Cape. The project, as I've mentioned, is $2.4 million and about $1.5 million has been spent to date. The duration of the project will be 4.5 years, and we're at the beginning of the fourth year of the project. The overall objective of the project is to build resilience in local communities who themselves identify their adaptation responses. And the project aims to support 12 small grant projects with approximately $100,000 each, which translates into about $1.3 million, but flexible, and to beneficiate or make sure that at least 600 people are better able to deal with the impacts of climate change when these projects end. And then the third deliverable is a methodology for scaling up this work, because you can appreciate that a $2.5 million project over 4.5 years is interesting, but it doesn't contribute to long-term sustained impact at scale, which is what we are seeking to achieve. To date in the project, we have 12 small grants that are underway. They cover a range of interventions, from breeding livestock with climate-resilient breeds to investing in infrastructure in communities such as improved guttering and insulation, the provision of water tanks, projects that create vegetable gardens at scale that respond to the needs of cooperatives and help communities to start growing surplus produce that can then be sold and also contribute to the nutritional needs. Many of these projects are local community people who provide feeding schemes for HIV orphans or other marginal people. And through these projects, at the local level, we are able to make a really amazing difference to people that are really in need of these sorts of interventions. I'm sorry I don't have photographs to show you today, but perhaps we can share them with you after the meeting. The future plans is that we will spend until the middle of this year, or perhaps September, seeing out the implementation of the 12 grants that are underway and close out the project, really reflecting on the lessons that have been learned, which are many, and seeing how we can scale this work up through international mechanisms. There's an opportunity to create the Green Climate Fund project that builds on this work, but also domestic mechanisms, looking at municipal local economic development and looking at South Africa's Green Fund for linkages and opportunities for scaling. Then finally, a very exciting new program of work for Sandy and South Africa is our work with the Green Climate Fund. The Green Climate Fund is a very big fund under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. It hopes to be spending $20 billion by 2020. Its ambitions have been somewhat compromised by some of the things that are happening politically with climate change, but nevertheless, it's a very big program of work. It funds mitigation and adaptation work, and it's different to the adaptation fund is that it doesn't only have one accredited entity, it has many. In South Africa, the accredited entities are SANDI and the Development Bank of South Africa, the DBSA, as well as a number of international entities that can work in South Africa. SANDI has an accreditation profile which is very specific, which allows us to invest in grant-based projects that focus mainly on adaptation and can have values of up to $15 million each, including co-financing. Honourable members, it might be interesting for you to know that in the Green Climate Fund world, a micro project is $10 million, a small project $50 million, and a medium project is $250 million. So it starts to give you an idea of the scale of investment that is envisaged by the Green Climate Fund. SANDI, together with DEAR, has a really important opportunity here to show how we can take what we've been learning through the Adaptation Fund and scale it up with Green Climate Fund investments. We've spent most of the last 2 years building the governance infrastructure for the program of work, which has included strengthening our national oversight committee to oversee this work, developing a funding framework that sets up the program of work that SANDI is able to invest in, and then calling for proposals. We received 126 and have been busy with a six-step review process of reviewing and screening these projects. And this has included very close engagement with DEAR, with national sector departments, with technical experts, with the Green Climate Fund itself, and then with our national committee and a high-level committee that we've established in SANDI to support this program of work. We hope to develop the emerging priorities into concept notes for submission to the Green Climate Fund, with two of them being submitted towards the end of 2019. And we are very excited about this because we think that these projects have a really substantial contribution to make to the NDP in terms of its aspirations for a just transition to a low-carbon economy. And we are also sure that they will deliver local, visible, tangible impact in some of the most vulnerable communities in South Africa and show us how we can continue to scale this work up across the country. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you, and honourable members, that concludes our presentation. We have presented to you the third quarterly report for 2018-2019. We have provided a briefing on the funding of the project in KwaZulu-Natal Municipality, as well as an update on the adaptation and the Green Fund. Thank you, Chair.
So we have dealt with all the three items. There's no pending presentation from you. Honourable members, there we are. May we interact with the presentations as they came. Perhaps just for guidance, we may want to start with the quarterly report to arrive at order. May I take
Can I ask, Chair, why the figures are presented in dollars? Are you also spending in dollars here? Why are you not presenting both sides? The funding came in dollars, but it's spent locally in rand. So are you not able to present your expenditure in rand?
Okay. It's a question that must be responded to at the time, or we want an immediate response, Chair, or as part of your contribution to questions. So it can be responded immediately, yes. Okay.
Sure, thanks for the question. Because the projects are funded in dollars, and because we're dealing with fluctuating rand exchange rates, we refer back to the dollar amounts, but of course when it comes to actual spend, we've got rand amounts that we can share. So we're able to provide that to the committee if you'd like that information. Our issue is that the rand fluctuates quite wildly between different years. So, you know, in this project, we've moved all the way from a rand dollar value from close to 12 to 14.5. And because the rand values come in response to the dollars in such different amounts, it's very difficult to track in rands. We have to track in dollars.
Before that, the accounting is done to Parliament now, and we don't use dollars, we use rands, so you will express this amount in rands when you come to account to us. But I understand the reasoning behind accounting to the funding authorities. But it's always better when you come here to express this thing in the denomination that we are using here in South Africa. But I just want to find out what are the reasons for the underspend on this project. Umgeni, Brazilian project. I see there's been an underspend, and I think the project has been going on for quite some time. Are there reasons for why is that underspending? And what are the institutional arrangements between SANDI and the district municipality? Because I see here the district municipality has been designated as the implementing entity. What are the arrangements there to safeguard or to make sure that the project is properly implemented and it is accounted for? That would be my question on this one. I think maybe I must just ask questions so that I don't have to come back again. Ask the questions that reflect on the rest of the presentation. The National Zoological Garden. I see here the plan is to integrate the garden or the zoological, what do you call it, NZG, into SANDI. The latest year is by April 2020. April 2020, meaning it's next year. What has been done to date? Because it looks a bit worrying that you keep on postponing the integration. What has been done currently? What are the practical actions that have been taken by SANDI to make sure that there is this seamless integration that we expect to take place between the National Zoological Garden and SANDI. I just want to find out also, secondly, what are the details of the project to be implemented by DIA that you're seeing in discussion with DIA. There is a program there called Environmental Programs. There are two of them, which the last time when we interacted, we identified that program as something that has got the potential to come and invest in the infrastructure, because when we were there, that infrastructure was a bit aging. And there is a gentleman in India called Guy Preston, Dr. Preston, Is that the gentleman that you're engaging with, and what are the progress in your engagement with him? Because they do have a significant amount of funding that can assist immediately in terms of boosting that infrastructure. So the point I'm making is that it must not be just another moving of an entity from science and technology to DIA, and then just it's business as usual. The point is that I know that it's Sambia, it's not DIA, but the COO from DIA is here. The point is that there must be concerted effort to begin to turn around that and begin to make the necessary investment to upgrade that National Zoological Garden as sort of a premier zoological garden in the country. I don't think there's another one bigger than that. And that one currently is being neglected. So those are my questions for now. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Thanks to the other members as well, who no longer be specific. Let's just ask questions broadly. I think the team is capable of noting which one goes to which specific presentation. So I don't think that will be a difficult. Honorable Pardon?
Thank you, Chair. First presentation, the number of research papers published in journals. I just want to know, are there targets for individual researchers or is it a general target? The slide 27, which refers to knowledge resources, I'd just like some detail of what is a knowledge resource? Is it individuals? Is it groups? What is a knowledge resource? If you could just explain that to us, please. Just bear with me. On the financial indicators, there was a red mark 43 days on the creditor payment and December 2018. Are those the correct dates above those columns? Also on finance, we've got splitting of quotations regarding the procurement of goods and services. If you could just tell us what goods and services. Please. And then on a lighter side, when we speak about the zoological gardens, I thought buying sharks in Blue Balls Country, is that not a rugby deal or what? You know, I've never heard of bulls buying sharks. On the KZN, I think the Ngeni Resilience Project, the total project value is 7.5 million. And we were told that the spend to date is 0.9. But I'd like to know what percentage of the funding is going to management, the COE, the cost of employees, and has the district municipality got dedicated personnel hired for the 6.5 year duration? If we could just have some detail on the personnel, who's working where, who's employed by who, and who's paid out of that money. I think we need a little bit of detail there, because that could be a grey area. The Adaptation Fund sets a country investment cap of $10 million. What is the time period on that? When is it reviewed? Does it come to an end? I can't see it unless I'm missing something. And then the Green Climate Fund, it says the GCF does not set national caps. There's $20 billion to be spent by 2020. Does it come to an end in 2020? What is the continuation of that? I'm a little bit, unless I've missed it again, if you just give us more flesh to that. It's an interesting one if it does not set national caps, because that becomes a challenge to submit more projects and develop more projects. So if you can just give us more detail on the Green Climate Fund, please, just briefly.
Honorable Senator.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. Okay, on the first presentation, I see that Program 4 performed the worst out of the 7 programs. Specifically, I'd like to look at slide 25, where it says number of risk analysis conducted for invasives. Okay, my first question there would be that your target for quarter 3 was 20, it was 20 assessments, but you did 5, which means you reached 25% of your target. Shouldn't that then be a rake, as 15 haven't been done? Now, I see your challenges and I see the corrective measures, but my question would be that how sure are you that you will reach that target when it comes to your annual target? And is a research assistant and your collaboration agreement, is that going to be enough for catching up with the 15 plus, obviously, your quarter four target? And then when it comes to the financial presentation, you said at one point that there's, and I can't remember at which point it was, you know, numbers confuse me. You said you're basically insolvent, but then there's an extra, do you know where I'm going? Okay. Can you just explain that to us? Like, if you're basically insolvent, and then there's extra, so you're not insolvent. If you could just explain that to me.
Can I just say also, add on my questions? On what slide? It's page 30 on my documentation here. Progress on resolving findings on irregular expenditure. The first one of 17.4 million. Can you get some more detail about what the issues were on this one? The construction of a building at Harold Fort and PG. What was the issue here? Okay, thank you.
Just a few from myself. CEO, just on the slide 26, on the workshop that you, I'm not sure whether blaming it on the external participants, it's the correct terminology, but what was the issue with external participants there, not attending your workshops? Are you sure next time around they will be there, they will be available? Or what may be the factors that accounted to them not participate? The second issue from me, just like the concern raised by the chairperson and honorable panel, I would like to understand the factors that account for the slow spending in terms of the district municipality. What accounts for that? What are the issues? So that we know what may need to be unlocked, if there are issues between yourselves and the district. You seem not to be satisfied about the pace but we are implementing the same project and we are blaming it on the district. What are the issues there? Or the district unfortunately is not here. They may be having issues with yourselves probably. So until we hear their side, we may not be sure, but just share with us what your objective view is around that. The other, just on the finances, the remedial action in terms of the issues raised by the Auditor General and so on, and your plans, CFO, have you shared that with the Auditor General's office? Are they satisfied? Are you at one? Or you are implementing that on your own without having shared with them? And then coming to NZG, by the way, when you moved to DIA from Science and Technology, did Science and Technology give funding along with the mandate, or you just came on your own to DIA without any funding following the mandate? Or hence we are perhaps sitting with a lot of these challenges. Secondly, you were trying to give us the achievements that you have done, some monies that was raised and so on and so on. What is the purpose for that? Is that to appease us to think that now financially you may no longer be having as much challenges as you used to have, and therefore integration is going to be feasible? Or should we still be worried that this integration is coming with all sorts of problems, and perhaps we need to do more work, probably the next the sixth parliament should do more to ensure that this integration happens smoothly. The two last points I want to raise. On slide 22, on the Green Climate Fund, the board has approved the funding framework to guide how this program could work, which is a good thing. I'm not saying that it's wrong, it's okay. But I'm just inquisitive. I wanted to understand whether there's no global framework for this funding model. It's every institution or entity that is appointed to manage these funds, developing its own funding framework per country or per that institution? Or how does it work? I thought that probably there was going to be some framework at the global level which is followed everywhere else, some be included. But my very last issue probably is there any interaction between yourselves and DBSA around this project? Or DBSA is doing its own thing, approving its own projects, you are approving your own, any other entity that may be implementing this Green Fund on behalf of the global entity doing its own, at what form or platform do you utilize to know what the right hand is doing is known to the left hand? So that either you don't duplicate, or if you get what I'm trying to say, you have a planned, a reconciled sort of approach to what is happening in the country as impacted by climate change, so that the response is also meaningful. It's not just something there, or we don't even know what as a country we are doing. I think I've made my point a bit clearer. If not, I think I can still come in, but I'm just saying I'm sharing the approaches or the views around this thing, particularly with DBSA. Thanks. Over to you. I'm not sure. Ocho, you want to come in?
Yeah.
I'm going to apologize. There's a meeting that I have to attend at 12. So I'll be leaving very soon. I wanted to make a proposal about the rest of the program. So we're supposed to be adopting the committee reports, the legacy as well as the other one, left. So can I propose that we move this one to next week, Tuesday? Okay, we'll have to convene a special meeting then to deal with this one. Because apparently next week there's a possibility that the House may start at 10 in the morning. But these two committee reports, we need to approve them. One we form a quorum and we don't know. And I'm leaving, so can I suggest that we do that before I leave?
Honorable Stenka, you want to work with it?
May I just add maybe that we, if there's any suggestions on both the reports, the legacy and the other one, if we maybe have additions or corrections, can't we just email it, then we can all look through it, and then we just adopt it, because it's going to take fairly long. I think if there's a, if we have to go clause by clause, if I could just add to the chairperson.
Okay, but we seem to be agreeing with what the proposal by the chair. So it's fine. I think that mechanism of forwarding whatever submissions members think in terms of amendments and so on, yes, we can do that through the secretary, and we can engage that on the date in question when we shall be having the special meeting. Okay, that agreed on the policy, on the committee issues later on. So we'll conclude when we conclude the responses. Let's allow the responses to take place. CEO will guide who comes, or right from the COO and Ms. Macau, because the two of you are board members as well. Although you, when things are tough, you may quietly want to be part of the department, but you are part of the audit and risk committees and whatever other committees on the board. So you must take your rightful spaces when, even when it's tough. And then Mr. Lutuli, it's time for responses. So it's not a strategic time to go out. Yeah, but let's receive the responses. Yeah, whichever way you want to allocate yourselves. In terms of who responds, you may come later, Dr. Olivia, if you want to come later. We can allow them first, probably to give the details when the chair is still here. Okay, over to you, CEO.
Oh. Chair, thank you very much. You have given us 19 questions. I will respond to some of the questions, but in general, questions related to performance on targets for programs for and related matters will be responded to by Ms. Mbizo, and Dr. Barnett will respond on the climate change related questions, and the CFO will take some of the finance related questions, and Mr. Allenby will deal with the NZG. Chair, I will take this opportunity to answer the questions that I could as a CEO, starting with the first one related to how we report on the expenditure for projects. We take note of the comments of the chairperson that even though we receive the funding in a different currency coming to the portfolio committee and for the records of the organization, we should report accordingly using the South African rand. So that we will do. Then I will answer partly the question on the NZG as to what has been done to date to integrate, and the concern from the chairperson that we seem to be deferring the complete integration to April 2020. Honorable members, could take note that at the time when the transfer of the National Zoological Gardens was approved or effected. Based on consultation, it was agreed with the board that we utilize the 24-month period to address the issues related to securing funding, addressing harmonization of conditions of employment, noting that the National Zoological Gardens were coming from, not directly from science and technology, but from the National Research Funding, which has a completely set of different conditions of service for staff. So to date, what we have done is to secure funding to address harmonizations of conditions of service. We have been talking to other departments, as noted by one of the honorable members. We're not giving you an update to appease you, but to indicate to you that even though we have an allocation standing for the National Geological Garden, we are using the opportunity of engaging other departments, such as tourism, to address some of the shortfalls. So the date of April 2020 is set to address the harmonization and to also comply with Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act, and making room for ensuring that labor is on board, they are agreeing to the issues that are related to how we move the NZG staff to be part of the institute in totality in terms of the conditions of service. Then, Chairperson, there was a question on the research papers, the target that is given. Ms. Nizo will respond to that, but the 85 that is reflected in the annual performance plan is an overall organizational target, but she can provide a detail on that. Then on the splitting of quotations on the matters that were raised by the Auditor General, I can respond to that one. The splitting of quotations is related to procurement of ICT equipment. The observation of the Auditor General was that it seemed as if most of the procurement was done at a level that would not have warranted getting a tender that is less than 500,000. That is why it was cited as possible splitting of quotations. And as reported, honorable members, we are addressing that. It is not yet an amount that has been condoned. Chair, I will also respond to the question on the irregular expenditure. The honorable member requested the detail on why the 17 million was cited by the AG as irregular expenditure. The reasons that were provided in the presentation are that it's in line with the delegations of authority within the South African National Biodiversity Institute. Any procurement that is above 15 million rand can only be authorized by the board. So in this case, procurement was done at an amount of 17.4 million without the authorization of the board. But as we reported earlier on, the irregular expenditure has been addressed by the Audit and Risk Committee and has subsequently been condoned by the board. So the flag by the Auditor General has been attended to.
So the board is involved in the approval of procurement processes. What does it mean then? It means that they must approve what the fact that they have to spend, or they must approve the procurement. What does the delegation say then? I'm getting confused now.
Chair, in response to the concern by the member, the board is not involved in the day-to-day determination of the specifications or the evaluation. What the board is involved in is the authorization once all the administrative processes have been attended to.
May I move on?
Chair, just to add from the board's perspective, the board has two duties. The one is a fiduciary duty. So we obviously have oversight over the supply chain processes and the integrity of the processes. But the CE has delegated authority to approve all bids up to an amount of 15 million rand. It is bids that only exceed that delegation that then come to the board for the board's final approval. But as the board, we don't process administratively any tenders. It's gone through through SANBI's supply chain process, and when it comes to us, we are looking at a recommendation from supply chain. And our sole concern is, have procedures been followed? We don't get into arbitrating particular bids. We just want to make sure that the process is sound and has integrity.
Okay. I don't want to do dialogue, Chair, because I'm going to leave. That's the reason why I'm keeping on interjecting, because I want to understand this. For me, it's a little bit of a concern. I don't know, I've not seen the delegations. But my understanding was it's issues of supply chain is done in terms of the PFMA and the supply chain regulations, which will probably guide how things are supposed to be to happen. Now, the involvement of the board is something that I certainly about it for the first time on issues of approving the bids and stuff like that. Because normally the board oversees the process, approves the projects that has to be implemented by the organization, and it receives a report that this is where we are in terms of implementing the project that you have approved. But participation in the actual approval of the bids beyond 15 million is something that I'm sure certainly has to be followed up and be looked into and clarified whether that is consistent with what the law requires. I understand that the board has got a responsibility fiduciary, but this thing of approval is something that I don't know. I'm just saying that I've not seen that, but it's a matter that I think you certainly need to follow up to make sure that that is in line with all the laws governing this thing. That may probably involve even engagement with the National Treasurer. So that would be my view. But of course, you might be doing it in line with what is there under the delegation. But let's just check if this delegation is in line with what the law requires that it should be done. Because I'm just worried when you bring in the board into those kind of matters. I'm not sure whether that is the intention of the current legislation. Yes.
Sorry, for homework. Yeah. Okay. Just take it home.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We indeed take note of the comments of the Honourable Member. Just to answer one more question before I hand over to the CFO and the other manager. There was a question on whether the remedial actions that were put in place to address the findings by the Auditor General have been shared with the office. Indeed, we can confirm, Chairperson, that the remedial
remedial actions that we've put in place have been shared with the Office of the Auditor General. Chair, I will hand over to the CFO to address the remaining finance questions, then Ms. Mbizo, Mandy, and then Craig. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. The remaining questions were, the first one was on the financial indicators on the creditor payment period. The headings on the columns are correct. The first column is December 2018, 30.1 days, and in March 2018 it was red, being 43.1 days. Then the second question is on the issue around the financial position on the solvency. So solvency basically indicates that our total assets are exceeding our total liabilities. If you are trading as an organization and your liabilities exceed assets, it warrants concern, because essentially it says that you have overexposed yourself. So if you look at our total assets, it's 749 million against a total liabilities of 119 million. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to answer the questions around the targets that we didn't meet. In terms of our research papers, a few years ago we introduced a research career ladder, and our staff were assessed and placed on that research career ladder, and depending on where they sit on the career ladder, there is a number of publications that they need to achieve to go to the next level. So also their performance agreements include a target on research papers. And this has really allowed us to address some historical issues, particularly amongst our taxonomists, where there wasn't really a culture of publishing. But now they have the incentive to publish in order for them to proceed up the research career ladder. So that has really been helping us to put the pressure on them. And it's in that division where we have fallen behind on our annual target. So it's definitely work in progress. On the issue around our knowledge resources, these are tools that we develop often in the form of guidelines or maps. And just to give you one example of a tool is our critical biodiversity area maps, which guide our municipalities in developing their land use plans. And they also provide crucial information to our government departments that issue authorizations. So it's different policy tools that we make available, and it's something that we would really love to share with you once they've all been published. With regard to the concerns around Program 4, where we've got four targets at the moment that we're behind on, we just want to reassure the committee that we know that two of them we will definitely achieve. The target on publications, we're working very hard to try and see if we can meet that target. And lastly, the target around our risk assessments for invasives, that has been actually quite a challenging target. The whole methodologies to conduct risk assessments for invasives is something new that we've been working on and trying to learn from other countries that do these risk assessments for invasives. We are unlikely to meet that. We feel we'll meet at least half of that target, but that is work in progress. And then, Chair, your question around the workshop that was postponed, we want to assure you that we are going to meet that target. And the reason why we postponed it is that for the non-detriment findings, it's around a particular species. So, for example, if it's around spiders and the experts around spiders are not available, it's actually not worth holding that workshop. So we ended up postponing it. But that's now being held, and we will meet that target. Thank you, Chair. I think I've answered all the questions.
Thanks, Chair. I've got, I think, 6 questions to respond to. The first 2 are about the Mgeni Resilience Project, and I'd like to start off by just explaining how the management arrangements work, which is that Sandy has contracted the municipality to run the project. So the municipality is responsible for project planning, project procurement, and project execution, but the procurement has strong oversight from Sandy. So, for example, every time there are terms of reference for a new staff member or terms of reference for a service that's over 20,000 rand, Sandy is required to sign off those terms of reference before the appointment of the service provider, and then also to oversee that spend is in line with those approved procurement items. In terms of personnel, the projects are capped at a 9.5% fee for executing entities. I don't have the rand amount for that, I've got it for the others. But in the executing entity budget, there's 2 staff that have been appointed. It's a project manager and a finance manager. And they are 100% dedicated to the project, and Sandy interacts with the staff regularly, so knows that that's happening. And then across the other components of the project, there are other staff members whose terms of reference have similarly been signed off by Sandy and who are performing technical aspects of the project. So we're certain that the funding that's going towards personnel is in fact going towards staff that are working in a dedicated way on the delivery of the Mgeni Resilience Project, but also working with municipal staff to mainstream the work into municipal functions, which is part of what the project is seeking to do. The question about low spend, the low spend is all in component 2 of the project, and that's the part of the project that is looking at ecological infrastructure, so the restoration and rehabilitation work, and the improvements to the built infrastructure, such as the housing and the bridges. Of the 105 million rand, more or less, total value of the project, 49 million is locked up in component 2. And there are 2 procurement items, which is for an engineer and for a service provider to undertake the restoration rehabilitation work that have been in discussion for probably a year now and are stuck in the office of the municipal manager. I had a conversation with the project manager yesterday who has asked if Sandy and Dia can come and find out what the blockages are and how we can assist them becoming unblocked. So that's a priority action for us in the coming weeks. Up until now, the project manager has been advising that the municipal processes were taking long and, for example, full council had to meet and apply their minds and so on. And she asked us to not get involved as Sandy and Dia because she was sure, or at that stage was fairly certain, she would be able to resolve matters. But I can say that as of yesterday, Sandy and Dia have been asked to come and assist the process. Then on the other questions, not about the Mgeni project, adaptation fund. Adaptation fund set the country cap of $10 million and hasn't lifted the cap at all. It's a subject that is under discussion by the fund, but at the moment the country cap is set. It's a once-off investment for the adaptation fund, and there's no mechanism to get any additional funding. In fact, the adaptation fund is being viewed increasingly as a stepping stone to the Green Climate Fund. So many national implementing entities who start their work with the adaptation fund have since become accredited with the Green Climate Fund and are pursuing investment programs with the GCF. The GCF, as I said, has an ambition to spend $100 billion a year by 2020. To date, they've mobilized $10.3 billion and have allocated a lot of that. There's a little bit left for direct access entities like Sandy, and we're being encouraged to submit our concept so they can be considered. And there's a resource mobilization program underway. I think the comment by the Honourable Member that there's an opportunity to increase the level of effort towards securing GCF funding in South Africa is correct. noting that there are many agencies that are accredited to work in South Africa with the GCF. So SANBI has a particular role to play, bearing in mind that we have an accreditation profile that limits us to grant-based funding and to certain sizes of projects. The much bigger projects are in the private sector and in the space of concessional loans and so on. So you start to see the banks and other institutions like that moving in with the bigger portfolios. That brings me quite nicely into the question about the linkages with the DBSA, because the DBSA has a very different accreditation profile to SANBI, where they're accredited for medium projects to up to $250 million, but for loans. So they're working mostly with the private sector and in areas, for example, of municipal financing, where there's expected to be paying back of money to the Green Climate Fund. We do work with the DBSA, but more in an ad hoc way, because it's the function of DEA to coordinate the accredited entities and actually to give the accredited entities guidance as to how we can perform different functions in responding to climate change for South Africa. So we take the guidance from DEA. The question about the SANBI funding framework, the Honourable Member is quite right in saying that the Green Climate Fund has a funding framework. And it's very specific about what the fund will do, in that the money is for transformative climate change work. And what that means is when an investment is made, at the end of the project, we don't slide back to where we were at the beginning. That the money comes in to overcome barriers that really moves the investment areas to a space where they are able to, in a sustainable way, be resilient to climate change. SANBI is one of the accredited entities, as has been mentioned, and so we spent some time going, what's our niche in this framework of a lot of investors coming in under this relatively broad GCF framework? And that's what the SANBI funding framework does. So it says we're looking for projects that are grant-based, because that's what we do, that focus on adaptation, because that's what we're accredited for, and that have nature-based solutions woven into them, because that's our competency area. So what we did is really refine the global framework, taking into account what South Africa's priorities for climate change adaptation are, and then bringing it into what SANBI is able to do based on our competency areas, and really setting us apart from other accredited entities who might be able to support different kinds of projects. I think those are all my questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to add on to the comments already made by our CEO, with regards to the funding, when the NZG transferred from the National Research Foundation to SANBI, it did transfer with a core grant. In addition to that, the DST has also committed to a sustainability funding for 3 years only. So I think your question around, Chair, whether or not we need to relax our efforts to achieve more funding for the NZG, no, we need to continue with those efforts. Because there is a funding gap between the salary bill and the core grant that we've got. In addition to that, there were no funds made available for the transfer, the actual harmonization costs of the NZG to SANBI when it transferred across. So that this last year was used in SANBI finding the funds to be able to accommodate the harmonization costs. So specifically a response to the why we've mentioned the funding from other agencies around the infrastructure upgrades. As we've mentioned previously, the NZG's infrastructure, and as you experience on the chair, is in dire need of upgrade, as it needs to respond to animal welfare, but also to ensure its future sustainability. So significant work has been undertaken by members of our board, and particularly with Dr. Preston as well from DEA to try and address these challenges. We've done an estimate on the overall cost required to upgrade or to renovate restore the NZG's infrastructure, and it's quite significant. In this current financial year, we've identified certain projects which relate to animal welfare, biosecurity, the actual security of the NZG and its infrastructure, as well as revenue-generating projects, and have attempted to fund them. We've gone out to tender on 9 projects, all of this with the support from DEA. So we are busy engaging specifically with Dr. Preston's team. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I believe we have responded to all the 19 questions. Thank you.
Before we get to DEA, we can just take Mr. Luthuli, and then go to Dr. Orfer and get back to the COO and Ms. Macau. Yes, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. I assume that the presentations have captured everything that our board committee was looking for. And as a board, especially on the integration issue, we've been working tirelessly as a board in making sure that the financial controls that are in place will translate into a faster growth as a synergistic approach. Because now remember, having the NZG coming into Sunbeam, the only advantage is that the business is not something that is unrelated. It's very closely related in what Sunbeam is doing. So somehow in terms of the human capital that is in place and the expertise of the board in terms of oversight, it somehow looks at improving the actual core business, which is now a new core business for Sunbeam. Visitor numbers has been one critical issue, and there has been ad hoc committees that have been formed to come across with things like cross-marketing between the two entities, which is also a new synergistic approach. So even if you look at the financial controls and financial indicators, issues of growth, liquidity, leverage and activity is very paramount as a board to us. Because obviously we are working with limited budgets. I mean, there's been quite a constraint in terms of budgets. So Sunbeam has to be in a position where it improves its numbers by almost, there's a new concept that is coming up, how do we commercialize it? So it's quite a new challenge for the board. Because where we are sitting now, we cannot look at the traditional business model of just depending on visitor numbers per se. So there's new suggestions that have been coming up and even reports that were written on how we exploit the intellectual property of the business to actually monetize it, which will impact greatly on our balance sheet once those assets have been evaluated in terms of the IP. And the CFO also did indicate our position of liquidity that we can actually meet our short-term obligations with limited resources as well. And we are taking advantage of obviously having to finance and raise capital to grow the NZG with the project that we are having currently. And in that, I don't think there's anything that we've overlooked as a board. Quite satisfied, Honorable Chair.
No, and the man wanted to hear your voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thank you.
In a more formal setup, so that we don't meet you on the corridors and you greet, but we hear you in a situation like this.
I think the team has gave it its best shot in terms of what.
No, if you're satisfied, you covered, it's all right.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Chair.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think the questions have been largely answered, but just if I could add on the NZG, because, when it was transferred, it obviously came across with the budget, but there's been historically very serious underinvestment in maintaining the infrastructure. And I think the committee observed last time when you did your site visit that a lot of the facilities are, the infrastructure is a bit degraded, and it's not at the level that's going to attract sufficient public interest to push the visitor numbers. So the big challenge for us is investing in that infrastructure, getting the infrastructure maintenance back on track, and taking the zoo to a level at which it's once again a global zoological facility that visitors to this country and South Africans want to line up and visit. So that is one of the big issues we're busy working with the NZG on. There have been historic issues around financial management at the zoo, which have been flagged in terms of our own internal audit reports. We are working very actively with the zoo on fixing those matters, and we're pushing very hard so that at the end of this financial year we're able to close out in a strong position and have all of the documentation ready for the Auditor General when he comes in. So that's been a big issue that we've been attending to as the board. You did pose questions around the global model, just to say, one of the things we've been quite concerned about as a board is the extent to which both Sandy and the zoo raise their own revenue. We know that, you know, government funds are under pressure. It's not an era where we can simply come back to Treasury and say, give us more money, because there isn't. So the only way we can grow our budget and find the resources to invest in these critical areas is by building our own revenue sources. So both at the zoo and at NZG, and at Sandy more broadly, we're pushing quite hard as a board for Sandy to keep its visitor numbers up, make sure it's getting revenue from the entrance fees, push on the outsourcing of non-core services like restaurants, the cable car, other things where private operators would be able to do it better than we can, while obviously keeping in-house our core functions around research and science and animal management. So that's a big issue. We are mindful, we've looked at a number of global models, quite importantly the benchmark in terms of fundraising, we noticed that Q in the UK spends at least 5% of their budget on fundraising activities. As Sandy, we currently spend below 1%. I don't know what the percentage is. It might even be 0.1%. So we've been pushing quite hard for Sandy to gear up its fundraising ability, if necessary, to bring in additional capacity in order to drive our fundraising strategy. So we're very mindful of, you know, what are global models and what are best practices that we should be trying to emulate in terms of our own funding models.
Yes, over to you. So the last shot, or whichever way.
Thank you, Chair. I thought maybe it would be critical just to come in, and it's still on the Zoom matters, but mainly on the concern that was being raised around a perceived delay in integration. Just to re-emphasize that the intention is not to delay, but I think what was being reported here talked to the issues around ring-fencing for the Zoom. And if you look at that period, it was given a 24-month period, with an understanding that when we are dealing specifically with human capital matters and matters that will lead to changes in service and in conditions of service for employees, you require engagements and bargaining councils, and those normally take a prolonged period of time. But that does not mean we have not commenced with the process of integration. It's just to give a reflection of that, but that to ensure, to give guarantee that by the due date, which is after 24 months, we would have finalized all processes.
Thank you.
Chair, I'm going to comment about funding infrastructure to say, yes, it is done together with the Department of Environmental Programs, Dr. Preston. I think we started a little bit late because we've already received a letter from National Treasury. We're requesting about 63 million to fund the zoological garden infrastructure. And I think Treasury was just quick to respond to say, no, you cannot transfer 63 million in March. So in line with the fiscals, I think they are guiding any transfer around about March. But we are setting up a meeting with the DG and the DG of National Treasury. We also met with Dr. Preston this morning to pursue that meeting to convince him to allow that money to be transferred to us. It is coming from EP, Environmental Programs, so this should be funded from there. Thanks, Chief.
With that, we have concluded all the responses, and I don't think there were any controversial or controversies around anything. And I take it, Honorable Patton, with the other members not here on their behalf, I don't think there are follow-up questions. We are satisfied with the responses. It's very unusual to get satisfied like this. Perhaps it's because it was the end of the term. So we may not be so keen to engage you that much, but this probably is the last meeting with Sam in this term, the fifth parliament. So next time around, you'll be meeting a new set of MPs in the sixth parliament who hopefully will pursue whatever issues that we've been dealing with yourselves, because we can't guarantee that members whom you're seeing now will be there in the sixth parliament. If they're there, it's also not guaranteed whether they will be serving in the environmental affairs. So the likelihood there will be some changes. But let's hope whatever happens, it will be in the interest of the country, and whatever good things that needed to be done or pursued will still be pursued. It will be part of our legacy report to whoever are coming into our spaces just to carry on with the good work. You keep well until then. Keep up the good work, Sambi and the board. We're wishing you all the best with the integration, whether we're there or not. Let that integration happen and smoothly as it's supposed to be. Whatever we can get funds, let's get the funds available to make sure that the process is concluded. There's no going back. We can't reverse that process. We must go forward. So you can't go forward without resources. All we need is to avail the resources for that process to be taken to its logical conclusion. With that, thanks a lot, members, for having stayed the duration of the meeting. Thanks a lot, everybody who flew to Cape Town. If you have to fly back, do so safely. We wish you all the best throughout the year. The meeting is closed. Okay.